to introduce yesterday, the question of how these array even exist in Malachi. And it's a fundamental problem with how it seems to play out and different perspectives dealing with that. Each perspective opens up all kinds of new avenues of exploration, both in terms of practicality and in terms of theory. And it has ripple effects for this Malacha, so other details that we'll talk about this Malacha afterwards, and also many other Malachas. So it's a very major sugya when it comes certainly to Zareya, but also when it comes to everything in Shabbos. Yes, please.
Tentatively right now, when they hear that from the news office, we have scheduled pizza lunch for Monday, 12th, at 12:15 in the Shear Room. It will be $2 for two slices of pizza and some pop for soda. If you could actually, tomorrow morning at Seder, I'll come around with the list. If you're interested, just let me know, but just so you can start to make your plans, plan to announce it now. Also, if you are an undergrad student and you are planning on being in the Shear, please make sure to have it that you were officially registered with the REITs office and the registrar. I know it's not so important to you guys, but it does help out myself down here in the Feldman. You can have an official roster in the next week or so. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, just in terms of this question, in terms of Malacha of Zareya, we started to explain yesterday there's essentially a fundamental question how the Malacha can exist. Because it seems to be a reasonable premise that for Malacha to be violated, it has to be violated on Shabbos. Also seems to be a reasonable premise that the act of Zareya, while we mentioned it's somewhat of a question as to how to define it, but presumably something has to happen to the seed. If I put the seed in the ground and nothing's going to happen to it, that wouldn't be significant. It wouldn't be called planting. It would be no different than my putting the seed on the table where nothing happens to it. That's for sure not called planting. It happens to be, both we'll assume from the conscious perspective and from a political perspective, that we need some significant period of time in order for this to happen. The Gemara suggests a minimum of 3 days. So therefore, it's essentially impossible for this significant act to take place on the same day as you did your effort. It doesn't seem like you can put the seed in the ground and have any significant thing happen to it within the same shot. So that seems to be a major technical issue which threatens the existence of the Malacha of Zareya. And it's threatened more clearly or more substantially by a sugya at the beginning of the Masechta, on the Avdalah Baal, where the Gemara has this whole discussion of Rediyas HaPas, that there is a prohibition with Rabbanan to take down the bread out of the oven on Shabbos. And therefore, in that context, the Gemara has the question, what if you find yourself in conflict? What if you find yourself in a situation where you put bread in the oven on Shabbos, apparently with intention to be Machal Shabbos, to bake on Shabbos, and then you went off the shul, you heard an inspiring brush, and you decided to be Shuva? Now what do you do? Do you cancel your malacha in the middle and take the bread out of the oven, save yourself from the chiyuv tzivua, from the violation of the malacha? Or do you instead respect the Yisod Rabbanan not to take bread out of the oven? So essentially, if the Gemara deals with that conflict, that's what the Gemara is interested in. When we say that he's stuck with the Chiyuv Skila because of the Rabbanan, or he has the right to violate the Yisod Rabbanan to save himself from the Yisod. Just parenthetically, if you're worried about this guy, the Tosfos over there has a suggestion that would relevant to come up with. We sleep about this guy. Tosfos over there has a suggestion that in any event, even if he has to stick it, he has to leave it stuck there, he's still not actually going to be chayav misa. It's an interesting question, why not? The Chassid Lover Rav, I mentioned him last week, has an interesting tshuva where he notes that there's a whole discussion why is it that tshuva doesn't work for Mrs. Bezzi. Somebody is supposed to be executed, probably a little bit on last Thursday, if I should show you about Mrs. Bezzi. It's a whole discussion, why is it that a person doesn't have air? It's high Misa, why is it that Shuba doesn't get him off the hook? That will be in Shuba. So there's a whole discussion of who has a Shuba about this, others talk about this. So some suggest that really Shuba should work. It should be that Shuba would get you off the hook. But we can never know for sure that the person really did genuine Shuba. Because everyone's going to say, when they're under the gun, when they're not to be executed, everyone's going to claim they did Shuba. So a Kaddish Baruch Hu can know if you're sincere or not, but the Beis Din can't know if you're sincere. So it's a functional problem. So the Kaddish Baruch Hu suggests, so here you don't have that problem. Because here you want to know if the guy's been Shuba or not for his Chil Shabbos. Look how firm he is. He's worried about the Issa D'Rabbanan. So clearly he's not Shuba on his Chil Shabbos. If he's asking the Shaila if he can violate the Issa D'Rabbanan and potentially take his life, that's a pretty clear halacha that he regrets his initial act of Chil Shabbos Tereza. That's an interesting perspective, just a tangential point about that Gemara. But in any event, in the context of that Gemara, so it seems to be that you're able to cancel cooking the milk. It seems to be that if you take the food out of the oven, you take the bread out of the oven, so you're no longer going to be violating the Isser of baking. So the question then is, it seems to be you have a similar structure here. That baking and planting both involve usual physical action, and sometime later there is a change that is significant. And that's true. So it sounds like from the Gemara about the bread that you can cancel the process in the middle. So if that's true, then apparently you're not in violation until the process is over. And in the case of planting, the process will never be over on Shabbos. So you can't violate this malacha on Shabbos. It's a major technical issue. So there were essentially two approaches, perhaps more, but there are, broadly speaking, two approaches to deal with this. And as we mentioned yesterday, they weren't invented by the Rashash and the Chassidus alone. They're reflected in earlier literature, reflected in later literature. Some have suggested you could find it hinted at in Rishonim. Mikhail suggests it's really a machlokes in the Yerushalmi. It's an issue that has reverberated through the generation, but the Rashash and the Chassidim make better. As you mentioned, they're pretty much exact contemporaries, living almost exactly the same time, around 1800 to 1875. And they take two different approaches. The approach of the Rashash, we'll mention him first, is that what happens is, there is a conditional chiyuv. The Rashash works off the premise that, yes, we do have to assume that baking and planting are the same. That this parallelism that we thought is there, it is there. We have to assume that they operate the same way. Therefore, how do we deal with the fact that the Gemara says you can cancel baking halfway, so you're not chayiv until it's over? So how could you violate Zriya on Shabbos, which never gets finished before Shabbos is over? So his answer is that the way both halachos work is that you do something now, and you are really violating the Isser now, at the time that you do your action. But it's conditional. It's conditional on the fact that later on we see that the Isser actually happens. If it turns out later that the Isser didn't take place, so then that's going to mean you didn't do anything. Retroactively, we'll see you didn't do anything. So they both work the same way. But the reason you're putter on the ballot, if you take the bread out of the oven, is because we retroactively see that your initial act of putting it in the oven didn't pan out. Didn't turn into anything. Hi.
Let's say you plant the seed on Shabbos and you're expecting the actual leaves, but one day later a bird comes and eats it.
Right, so that's what it sounds like. It sounds like if it doesn't manifest itself, you're off the hook. The big kiddush, which comes out of the Rashash, that is a big kiddush, we'll save one kiddush for Rashash and one for the Chassidim. The big kiddush that comes out of the Rashash is that just as it's possible to cancel the baking by taking the bread out of the oven, so too it's possible to cancel the planting by taking the seeds out of the ground. That's a massive finish. Very significant finish for halacha. And if you plant, you violate the Issur Tareya on Shabbos, it's only conditional because it hasn't taken root yet, and you come back Sunday and you take it out, you've undone the Aveira. It's a very good muscle for Elul. Uproot your Aveira, you can come back and mamish take it out of its roots literally and have it undone. So spiritually it's a very nice idea. It's a radical finish when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. You can undo this malacha afterwards. So essentially you're doing the malacha now, contingent on something happening later, okay?
Is like doing it the next day, is that like sort of like shiva, or just that you're undoing?
So no, you're retroactively establishing. Maybe you're motivated by tshuva, but you're retroactively establishing that the malacha never happened.
It's like it's tshuva, it's as if it never happened.
Right, now it happens to be, again, in an Elul perspective, we believe that tshuva has that power too. But here, right, without tshuva, you can actually come and physically uproot it. It's a great muscle. That's what happens according to him. Just to explain it more clearly in a second. I'll take a question in a second, and give you a muscle amount of double dogma. I once changed addresses, and I wanted to register to vote. And the last day of registration, last day to accept registration, I faxed in a form in my registration. And they called me up from the Elections Bureau and they said, we can't accept the fax. We need the physical copy of your signature, so you have to mail it in. So I said, but if I mail it in, like it was his fault, but if I mail it in, then today's the last day, you're not going to get it in time for the deadline. So they said, no, it's not shot, don't worry. Said that we're going to accept your registration today on condition that we later get your signed copy with your physical signature. So when we get a few days from now the copy in the mail, so then we're going to accept the registration that you sent in today. So essentially, I registered that day on condition that they later get my physically signed form. So too, says the Rashash, I did the malacha now on the condition that it pans out later. So that is a very significant chiddush that essentially the Rosh Hashanah is saying that they work the same way, Afia and Zriah. And in both cases, your Aveira is happening when you do your part, conditionally on what happens later. So therefore, if you take your seeds out of the oven later, take your seeds out of the ground later, so that you are going to cancel the Aveira. The second chiddush actually we'll mention now as well, also a very significant point, is let's go in the other direction. And so we see then that when it comes to planting seeds, so you plant on Shabbos, and according to this, you're chayiv for something that happens after Shabbos. So if we assume that Afia and Zriah are parallel, so what would happen usually when you bake something, you do the whole process on Shabbos? It takes some time, but you can have the whole thing contained within Shabbos. Let's say you don't. Let's say you put something in the oven right before Shabbos is over. So you did your planting, so to speak, the parallel planting you did on Shabbos, and the baking happens after Shabbos. Would that be considered a chiyuv malacha for baking? So according to this, how does it play out? Yes, basically, we're paralleling the two. So we assume they have the same structure. Afia and Zriah are the same. So in both cases, you can start on Shabbos and have it happen after Shabbos, and be chayiv. And in both cases, you can cancel it in the middle. Yes?
What about starting something before Shabbos?
Okay, so the premise seems to be we'll get a lot. Let's hold off for a minute. We'll come to discuss each aspect by itself. So we'll discuss that in a few minutes. But just what is the Minchas Chinuch's position? So Minchas Chinuch disagrees with this whole story. He has a different approach. And his approach, he's able essentially to take care of some of the problems by essentially positing that he doesn't think that Afia and Zriah are parallel. They have different mechanisms. And we'll have to discuss at more length different reasons why that would be. But But according to him, Zriya takes place right away. The definition of Zriya is putting it in the ground. And Dafiya, or Bishul, is defined differently. It's defined by producing the cooked food. So when it comes to Zriya, you're chayav right away when you put it in. And when it comes to Bishul and Dafiya, you're only chayav when the process is finished. So therefore, first of all, he's not worried about the Gemara and Daf Dalet, because he doesn't see it as parallel. Yeah, you can interrupt that fee in the middle because you're not finished yet. While Zriya, if you take the seeds out afterwards, here again a major sheet that leads to the finish. According to Minchas Chinuch, nothing doing with your tshuva. A little bit depressing message for Ella. You put the seeds in the ground, that's it. You're over the Avera. The only way to undo this Avera is tshuva. Coming back on Sunday is not going to do anything that's going to help it. Yes, sir.
Isn't defined by anything done on the ground. It's defined by encouraging growth.
Correct.
I can throw seeds on a pavement and it doesn't do anything.
Correct. So apparently we're going to have to define it a little bit more specifically, that the act that you do that will lead to growth is the definition of Zriya. Now, why is that true as opposed to, let's say, Bishul, where we need to bring it to completion according to him? So we'll discuss in a few minutes different ways of looking at that.
Very similar things.
Correct. So there is basis to think that they're similar, and that's why the Rashash has his defenders, and the Minchas Chinuch has his defenders. We mentioned again, we can give you a list afterwards if you want about history. This has been a huge debate. There have been many tributes written on both sides of the equation. We'll talk about it a little bit more, but there are many who line up on both sides. This is a highly contentious issue. But premise one here is that the Minchas Chinuch distinguishes between Zriya and Afiya. And therefore, he's not worried about the Gemara and the Dalit. You can interrupt Afi in the middle, but you can't interrupt Zriya in the middle. When it happens, it happens. And therefore, also, you can't do anything afterwards that's going to undo it. To give a muscle for what he's saying, so it would seem that a good parable would be, so let's say you shoot somebody, try to kill somebody, you shoot somebody in January. And he's sick in the hospital, and he lingers for 2 months, and he dies in March. When did you kill this guy? January. When did he die? In March. It's possible for there to be a distinction between when you do something and when it happens to the item. So, therefore, you planted the seed on Shabbos. When was the seed actually planted as far as its own consideration? When it actually takes root. And the Minchas Chinuch proves this point by a comment in the Sefer Achinuch. Sefer Achinuch is elsewhere. And many of you saw the Sefer Achinuch on Mar Mokomo's list and knew we were talking about Minchas Chinuch. They have the same mitzvah, it's a different mitzvah. It's talking about the mitzvah of the Yisr of planting Kiron. Sefer Achinuch has a distinction, which others have as well, that when it comes to the issur of planting kibbutzim, so you have a prohibition to do something, and there's also a status that's going to happen. You're going to have now a prohibited substance. So says the Sefer Achinuch, the issur you violate as soon as you put it in the ground. But the status of prohibited, that comes only once it takes root. Says the Minchas Chinuch, we have a similar structure here. You do your Avera when you put it in the ground. When is the seed considered to be planted? Only when it actually takes root. Happens to be, there are some other Afronim, like the Shuvas Karim and David and the Master Rav, who believe there's a difference between Shabbos and Kiloyim, that the basic difference is true, but they don't accept that Kiloyim has that split. They say Kiloyim, the Chiyim, is only when it actually takes root. The Torah says, Sanchal of Sisra Kilayim, so the field should not be planted. While on Shabbos, it's maybe more about you, which fits well with the whole distinction we had about Shabbos in general. He comes at it from a slightly different angle, but it has to do with the Mishnah comparison. But there is a general approach that there might be a distinction between the issue of planted seeds for Kilayim. Kilani purposes and the Malacha of Zareya as far as Shabbos is concerned. Hey.
According to the day that says that you can unplant the seed, the next day you'd be fine.
You're unplanted the next day, right?
Could you still get run off of that seed, or is it now?
Once you took it out?
Yeah.
Well, once you took it out, it should be totally innocent. It's never going to be innocent, the rice, if you have enough of it anyway, as we discussed. The only question to be served is Rabbanan. But here, what's wrong with the seed? The seed's not planted. So you separated it from any potential malacha. The question, even on the level of Rabbanan, the question would be when you have a malacha that was created, but here you've undone the malacha. So it shouldn't be any reason after.
So according to what we were saying, the introduction about categorizing things as sort of thefts or gavra. Mm-hmm. So I think we can see sort of the Rosh Hashanah thinking side, but the emphasis has nothing to do with the Sefer then. Is that we tell which side to sort of thinking of that?
It seems to be they're focusing more on the individual. I want to discuss at the end whether we're comfortable plugging this into the whole story. I think there are those who want to do that for sure, and definitely the tendency is to do that. The question is the motivation really there, which we'll talk about when we see the whole picture a little bit more. But it does seem that what the Sefer, that the Menachem Sin at the same base as Sefer, you know, is that here we're interested more in your halacha. So your planting to place on Shabbos. While even though the chefzo of the seed, if you want to use that language, is not planted until later, but you did your planting now. Just like if you shoot somebody and it takes some time to die, so you killed him today, even though he died sometime later. Right? So he can never come with an excuse. Let's say somebody does the Avera, does his part of the Avera earlier, and then he dies in between, and then the effect happens later. So you can't say, oh, that wasn't me, I was dead at the time. The action was done when he was up, even if the effect plays out later. So the Menachas Chinuch essentially comes out against the two major Chidushim Lahalacha, who won the Kuhu, won the Kumra, of the Rashash. That, on the one hand, coming back the next day and taking it out, does nothing. But, on the other hand, Bakula, so to speak, if you put bread in the oven at the end of Shabbos, and it only cooks after Shabbos, it's going to come out from the Menachas Chinuch like your putter. Because the Menachas Chinuch is going to assume, as our premise was to begin with, that a malacha requires you to have the beginning and the end on Shabbos. The only reason we thought for a minute, or the Rosh Hashanah thought that it doesn't have to have it, the only reason we've seen so far at least, is because we're assuming that there has to be a parallel between baking and planting. And since planting can't all happen on Shabbos, so therefore it sounds like it can be finished after Shabbos. And since we know that baking is potentially interruptible from the earlier Gemara, if we put the whole thing together, it comes out that if you bake, the baking is finished after Shabbos, you're going to be chayav. Since the Menachas Chinuch argues on that whole premise, comes out that doesn't work. In order to violate the malacha, you have to have both on Shabbos. You have to have the beginning and the end. Putting it in and cooking. And Zariah doesn't have to have that because Zariah is a different type of malacha. So far, so good? Does it make sense, more or less? Okay, it happens to be there's an in-between sheet there as well. Yegwe Tal maintains, Yegwe Tal essentially sides with the Chasim. But he makes a crucial clause, which the Chasim very briefly alludes to and doesn't seem to agree with. Yegwe Tal's kind of in-between position is that yes, the Chiyuv is right away. But you have to have intent that you want it to spread. Flush it out the position of the movement. When you put it in the ground with intent for it to sprout, so then that's a malach on Shabbos. And even though the sprouting happens sometime later, it doesn't matter, you're still chayav for now.
Correct.
But even also, I was also going to agree that even if you change your mind the next day and come take it out, it's not going to help. He essentially agrees with the Mithasim. However, he says if you never intend to put it in, you intend to come pick it out on teaching a shir and hopefully three on Shabbos afternoon to hear. Here's what you can't do. And you put it in the ground, well, it's okay, I'll come in and shock the audience and show how you're going to display the malacha on Shabbos. And you say, okay, I'll come back on Sunday and pick it out. So the Gittel says, okay, in that case, you're not going to be kind. But other than that, he essentially agrees with the Tessin.
Why wouldn't that be the show of the secret Shabbos?
situation is definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
Where it's not definitely going to happen, still can figure it out.
So it's only if the other team doesn't end up coming to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so then, right, so it's a good question. But
he doesn't have the intent, but yeah.
Right, so I think that how it also will let off from the Sarah and Hashem is the intent not to keep up. And then it came out afterwards, not a situation, because the situation of the definition is definitely going to happen. Well, so here it's not definitely going to happen. If we find that afterwards, it happened, then we can fix it. You want to say it's a situation because maybe we should define a situation.
It's going to happen unless you.
Right, if you leave it by itself. That's not usually the case. In the case of you're doing something and it actually will happen. It's an interesting question. We'll get to the situation and try to figure out if that's a good definition of it. Usually it means it really will in the real world happen. So here, opening up a new issue, what if it would happen in the real world instead of really planning on stopping it? Interesting question. I have a feeling that Katal would pop you anyway and say that, okay, here you didn't believe in the Malacha because the Malacha is defined as putting it there with the intent for it to be left there. You probably have to die. According to him. When the Mechassinu himself, I'm sure you would be, because that's what the law is. Now, the Mechassinu, he very briefly alludes to that idea. And Rosh Shmuel Zalman Auerbach also has a tshuva, where he also addresses that idea. And he doesn't agree with it. He doesn't agree with it. Say that the idea that you should be off the hook if you intend to come get it afterwards. Right, to accept their premise, but then say you're off the hook if you come and uproot it, they don't agree with this. Because they feel one particular muscle for what that is. What if somebody was bon almanas listor? Or kosei almanas listor? Let's say you're going to build a building, and you have intention to knock it down. Or you're going to write something with intention to erase it afterwards. So we wouldn't say that that's funded. I wouldn't say that's makalka, let's say, for example, because you were right now you're doing the malacha. The fact that later on you want to undo the malacha, okay, that's very nice. That means you're doing two avers, actually. So you'll do both bona and salsa. And you'll do both kosei and mokhe. But it doesn't undo the first one, it just is another malacha. As we often find, a lot of the malachas are opposites to each other, right? So if you do both of them, you do one thing and then undo it. It usually means you're doing two malachas. So they don't think they both don't think that the Egwe Tal's points, one writing before him and one writing after him, they both don't think that that's so convincing that essentially why should this be different than building something with intent to knock it down or writing something with intent to erase it? Do you think that's a convincing comparison? See any room to argue in that comparison? No?
Well, I thought what the Rishonim was saying is that he didn't have Kavana that he was going to take it out at the beginning, rather he just had to change a part of the case.
Right, this isn't within the Rashash. According to the Rashash, if you take it out, you're Patur anyway, no matter what you were doing. Right. But according to the Mechassinu's position, is that you're Chayiv right away. Right. But the Egwe Tal has a condition, I agree with that. Yeah. But if you never intended to leave it in, if your intent was when you put it in, you're going to take it out, then you're okay. And the Mechassinu. And then the Kashlomo will say, no, that should be the same thing, because if I build a building, I'm planning on knocking it down, I have a bone in it. So too, once we define the Malacha as putting it in the ground, right, we disagreed with the Rosh Hashanah, we said it's just about putting it in the ground. So the fact that I have intent to try to undo it shouldn't help me. I think the comparison is a perfect comparison.
Is there any other Malacha? In that case, your Kavan is looking like the three things you can use.
Kavan is what? Sorry?
In that big Malacha, Kavan is the only thing you can use. So if you think it's going to be written, that's also going to happen.
Nah.
But in this case, it's actually going to happen. Hashrosh is going to happen if you just leave it in there. So it's not like even if you might, it's not so dependent on your kavanah per se, but there's an action that's happening, it's automatic.
But that would seem to be a chumra for both, right? Because then you, in the case of the Zariah, it's going to happen automatically. In the case of the Binyan, it's already done.
Or the chumra that you, that would be defense of the middle scale, of course, the policy, the other policy would make sense. Can happen anyway, so how can I just unthink it?
Mm-hmm. If you're saying you're basically you do like the comparison.
Right.
Then the comparison is even better.
Right.
Okay, the question is, do you see a weakness in the comparison?
The inverse action of Binyan, Stira, is actually a Malacha.
Right.
Whereas the inverse action of picking up the seeds is not necessarily a Malacha.
See, it's an interesting question. That doesn't really come up also. It's not necessarily a Malacha. It could be a Malacha. I mean, if there is a Malacha that pulls a Kotzer, so in theory, theory, if I uproot something. So it is a malacha. But it's interesting to note, as we'll see, they don't always go together. It's possible you could have something that's called zoreya and the opposite is not called kosa. So I guess your point is that they're not automatically.
Not automatically.
Even though they could be offset against each other. So that's an interesting point. And there are others who suggest a different difference. The contemporary statement called Tom Malachos by the Britain. The answer by Simon is by the Britain. Where he suggests, I think it's a compelling point, that when you talk about bonin, so it doesn't matter if you're doing it on the Nasalist or because once you built the building, it's there. So that's objectively binyan. In fact, if you plan on knocking it down later, that's very nice, but right now you have a building. What the Eglintal is suggesting, and there is some effort to this, there is some pressure to this, that since we see that sometimes you put a seed in something, whether it's soil or something else, and it's not Israel, and here as well, you're putting a seed in the ground that is not yet connecting. So what is it that makes this an act of Zriya and seed on the table not an act of Zriya? What's the missing element? My intent that it should eventually take root. So what Degli Tal is basically saying is that if I have no intent for it to ever take root, so then that's simply not Zriya. That's putting a seed on the table. That's putting a seed on the floor for some reason, on the ground for some reason, that's not planted. Nobody would plant something with the intent to come take it out before it kicks in. And this is going to have important ramifications because there are other reasons sometimes, as we'll see, why you might put seeds in the ground or other things in the ground without intent to necessarily have them grow into something. And that won't automatically be true. So the only difference is your intent for it to stay there. But according to the Rashash, the only difference is you follow through, you let it actually grow. So according to Rashi, you don't have this question. But according to Minchas Linuch, that putting it in right away is a malacha. The only thing that's going to distinguish that from putting it on the table is the intent that it ultimately will take root. So the Eglei Tal is saying, if you never have that intent to begin with, so then that's simply not qualifying as a real.
The other example he said that they quoted of Ksiva, isn't part and parcel of Ksiva is Ksiva Shokayama?
Correct. Okay, it also means that it's an invisible ink. It's not going to wrap on its own. But it's good ink. It's
well, if I have an intent, maybe it won't have this.
But apparently not. And there again, your co-save, we don't assume that it's good. It's only if the ink itself doesn't last, that it has some type of a fixar in it, so then you have the So essentially, I think Rav Goodman's point is well taken. That's presumably what the Eglei Tal is saying, that the act that's going to make it, planting as opposed to anything else, even for the Chasmino, is the intent that it will ultimately connect. So let's look at these two chidushim, the two issues that come out of this. One, the question of the difference between baking and planting, the Chasmino's assumption that there is a difference. And then after that, let's look at the other major nafkamina that comes up. What if you do a malacha at the end of Shabbos and it's going to finish after Shabbos? So first, in terms of the difference. So according to the Rosh Hash, there's no difference. We follow through a parallel across the board. Zriya and Afi are treated the same way. But according to Menchas Tinuch's premise that they're not treated the same way, why shouldn't they be treated the same way? What differences could we draw between these two acts, which seem to be parallel? They both involve you do something, some time passes, and then a change happens to the one you were dealing with. How can we distinguish between these two cases? Okay. Okay, so what about length of time? How does length of time, is it a qualitative distinction, a quantitative distinction? Okay, how do you want to put length of time into the equation? There certainly are opponents who say that. How do you want to...
baking is something that's gonna that happens within a day. Like, it might be like a couple hours, might be a couple minutes, but it's gonna happen within the length of Shabbos. You know, like, you'll have like the sheer of cooking enough for it to be considered edible. Mm-hmm. But with planting, I don't know any plant that will take root within a day.
No, it won't. Our premise is that it won't.
Right.
So, our premise is it's not going to happen.
Right, so it won't happen over Shabbos. You won't have a finished product by the end of Shabbos. And then the length of time is going to continue on for who knows how long it takes for it to spread.
So that is true. The question is, that's really the first step to an answer. So there are many different answers that are built off that approach. Just to give you some possible suggestions while you're thinking about it. So one could say, well, maybe if we have to define our malacha somehow, and maybe it's just we're forced into this corner. Now we know there's a malacha of Zeraya. And some of that farmers say this way, we know there's a malacha of Zeraya. We know that it can't finish on Shabbos. Therefore, we see, what is Zeraya? Zeraya must be your part of it putting it in the ground. Because the time is too much of a lag for us to have any other definition of Zeraya. That's kind of a backed into the corner approach, which some have. I think Yam says something along these lines. I think Yam, by the way, points out that there is also a Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah says, I remember if somebody will come us or not, I think we did, that the Mishnah says that, at least according to one opinion over there, if somebody plants on Shabbos as a knas, he has to uproot it afterwards. That's a whole discussion. He does it a shogeg, he does it amazing. So the assumption seems to be that the malacha is done already, because if the malacha is still ongoing and you can stop it, so then for sure you can take it out afterwards in order to not violate the malacha. So it sounds like from that Mishnah, perhaps, that Mechasinuch is right. Yes, sir?
Is it the same thing in Shemitah for the same reason they have to uproot it?
It's related. You know, the Mishnah talks about the two together, that if you're violating the Isser, there's a knas afterwards.
So it's because of
Because of the Aver. Yeah. Not in order to try to stop it afterwards, because of the Aver. So this difference of the time lag, it could be because we just forced to define the malacha that way. It could be because maybe that shows you that there's more involvement on the human side. Some suggest along those lines that when you're baking, so it's essentially an automatic process. Maybe it takes a half hour, maybe it takes 5 hours. But essentially, you're putting it in, you're waiting for it to come out, then it comes out. While when you plant something, you put it in the ground, and you go about your life, and then you come back sometime later and something's happened. But it's not a direct process. So those who suggest they have that difference. So, Mechaschinuch himself suggests it's a linguistic difference, that he somehow perceives the word asiya to refer to the finished product, while zriya refers to putting something in the ground. You could argue on that implication, don't necessarily see that in such an obvious sense. But you could say also, in terms of the way we speak today, say, if I ask you, if you put something into the oven, and you just put some bread into the oven 5 minutes ago, and I said to you, did you bake the bread yet? What would you answer? You could say no, or you might say, I'm baking it right now. Now you probably wouldn't say, yes, I baked it. You'd say, I'm baking it now, it's in the oven. If you put a seed into the ground, and I say to you, so did you do the job, you plant the seed? So presumably you'd say, yes. You wouldn't say, yeah, for the next 3 days, yeah, I'm planting it right now. So yeah, I planted it 3 days ago, and it's hopefully it's going to grow into something nice. So there is a both linguistic reality, which reflects the attitude, that our mentality is, when we put something into the ground, we're done with it. Maybe we have to do other malachos, but our planting part is done. And we put something into the oven, so we're not done with it. It's still on our mind, and we're focusing on it until it actually comes out of the oven. And hopefully you don't forget any time when something's in the oven that it's a little bad. While when you put seed in the ground, you essentially can forget about it until your next job that you have to do. People could also suggest that ovens, even though ovens are a very old invention, as we see from Mark, but still, they're essentially an invention. So what is an oven? An oven is really a way, so you don't have to stand there over the fire with your hot dog. So instead of having it standing like this, you can put it inside this box, which is called an oven, and it'll wait there, and then eventually you can come and take it out. So really, the oven is just an extension of your hand. So you are doing something with a tool of the oven instead of having to just stand there over the fire. When it comes to planting, the ground's not doing something on your behalf. It's not acting as your hand. It's doing something completely independent of you. So therefore, your act, your human involvement, is really just putting it in. And I think that's a relevant distinction as well. Rav Asher Weiss suggests an interesting spin, but a little bit similar, that things grow in nature. And if human beings weren't doing anything, you would still have things grow. Growth is a natural process. So when we talk about Zareya, the part that you do is you put the seed into the ground. But growth is not a human action. While cooking things, baking things, that doesn't happen in nature. That happens because you chose to do it and chose to hold this item over the fire, put it in the oven until it happens. So therefore, the human act of bishul is the whole process, while the human act of plant growth is putting it into the ground. So therefore, we can again distinguish between the two. Rav Shlucha Zissel Breuer, as we mentioned, we talked about the shear for Zareya the other day, we talked about it yesterday, so we mentioned that he felt that Rashi couldn't think that a shear of Zareya is a grogris, because a grogris, a dry fig, is a food shear. And that Zareya is not about something you do to food. It's about something that you do to the land, to the karka. So too, he says here, there's a fundamental difference between baking and planting. That baking is something you do to food. You prepare food, make it edible. Planting is not something you do to food, it's something you do to the ground. So once you put a seed into the ground, you have planted it. While baking, you don't do that until the food is ready. And therefore, that's a distinction that might be relevant as well. It's also brought up, there are those who suggest that maybe once you put a seed into the ground, so, despite the fact that it hasn't yet taken root, but by the nature of it being in the ground, it essentially has become bottle to the ground. It's essentially now part of the ground. The seed is in the ground. So, therefore, it ceases to have any other role in your malacha process, because once you put it in the ground, okay, you have now canceled the seed to the ground, and that's considered to be an act of planting, which is an approach which isn't necessarily relevant to the act of making or cooking. So, see, there are a number of different suggestions, a number of different ways to look at it, all upholding the Mechastino's basic premise that these two malachos are not comparable, and there is a fundamental difference between planting and baking. Anyone have any other suggestions, any other thoughts to throw into that mix? There's enough different ways to distinguish the different perspectives, what the Minchas Chinuch is getting at, as far as why there should be a difference between the two. And again, the Rosh Hashanah didn't think there was a difference at all. So this also opens up a whole avenue, which is relevant to everything. There are Tzibes Frank, and one of his shubas, he has a shubas called Har Tzvi, and in the back he has a special section, back in the Arachayim shubas, he has a special section about the malachos. So he dismisses the whole question by saying that he doesn't think there has to be an assumption that malachos are all the same. That malachos don't have to operate the same way. He can easily handle that Zareya works one way, and Bishul works another way, and we'll figure out why one is one and one is the other, but there's no premise that they have to operate the same way. So, it's an interesting question as far as all of Malachas of Shabbos. Are we comfortable with that idea?
No.
No, why not?
There's something wrong coming out of the top. Torah not to violate law.
It's a good question. I'm personally unsure how comfortable I am with that idea. That on the one hand, you're right, that it's hard to make a distinction when maybe it's a custom and not safer, but if the Torah doesn't list out all the different malachos, so all we know is don't do malacha. So then, how radically can these malachos differ from each other? On the other hand, we do have 39 different categories, and maybe if we have a system in place, and we have the Mishkan, and we have some type of derivation, maybe we can say, well, they can be different, because each one has its own mechanism to learn out what's going on, and we'll look at the details, and we'll try to figure out from the Mishkan, and from the Gemaras, and from what we have, how they play out. And therefore, if they come out differently, they come out differently. And we don't have to worry about the lumpus and about abstractizing so much. That, oh, here's a different structure. This happens at this point, this happens at that point, and that's a whole disaster. Yes?
Can we just say that because of the fact that there's one pasuk, it would all seem to be the same, and the fact that the Gemara gave us this case with Afia and Zriya, so those are just all that, those are the exceptions. That's why the Gemara gave it. Generally, everything would be looked at.
You see, it's hard to say because it's too specific a context in this one issue. That when we're talking about, there are a lot of other areas in which this is going to come up. The question of to what extent can we derive a principle about one malacha from saying, well, malacha A works this way, so maybe malacha B works this way also. So I don't know if we can get so specific and look at this one case and say, especially we have to get to the whole Rosh Hashanah and Chassidus, even though there is a difference. Right, it's going to be a very roundabout way of figuring it out.
Maybe the way that Havara was mentioned explicitly in the Torah is a precedent for each malacha being the same way that the one would be high for each and every violation of Shabbos, it's mentioned explicitly so that each malacha is different.
It could be. So once we already accept the concept of chiluk malachas, and we accept that malachas have been distinguished from each other, so then maybe we also have the right to say from a lumbish perspective, from a mechanical perspective, they can work differently from each other. Now there are achronim, such as the Chaznish, for example, who have taken it as a principle that there are at least two different types of malachos. There are some malachos that are about doing something, and there are some malachos that are about bringing about a certain result. And this is not necessarily related to what we talked about in our opening discussion about you or the world, because they're both about what you're doing. The question is, what is it that you're not allowed to do? Are you not allowed to do some type of physical action? Or is your action secondary? It's more about the result that you're bringing about that you are not allowed to do. So, for example, this comes up also in the context of tzad, of trapping, that you're not allowed to trap an animal on Shabbos. So what does it mean to trap an animal? So you could just jump on an animal with a net and trap it, but more often they would trap it in a kind of indirect way. You set up a trap, and the animal comes into the trap. So then maybe that's what that malacha is, that you can't set up a trap to trap an animal. So maybe there are different categories of malachos. Some malachos are about the physical act itself, and some of them are about your triggering a certain action by its very definition. So this is an open question, and then the issue of in general, to what extent can you look at one malacha and say, okay, here's how it operates, therefore all other malachos operate this way, is somewhat of a debate. If you want to take a look, there's a nice sefer on the malachos of Shabbos called Tevas Moshe by Moshe Brown, where he, in this malacha of Zareya, gets into a whole analysis of this question, using a lot of examples from other malachos. To what extent can you say, okay, this malacha works this way, so therefore that malacha works that way? So that's a very major Hilchos Shabbos question, which could affect the whole tenor of this discussion. Hi.
This idea that we're saying that why does one thing have to relate to another, outside mm-hmm. of Drashot and the Gemara, mm-hmm. why can't we say this with when people compare halacha and they...
You know, it's a question in general also. So you could ask this question in two ways. You know, we do assume there's a certain unity to the whole halachic system, that there is a certain comparable principle, especially because Chazal used that principle. So we work off that afterwards, that there is a general structural pattern.
But maybe the malachos themselves have different, you know, sometimes we find two malachos different from each other, and then we have an explanation why. We say because they have a different focus, because they have a different goal, or whatever it is. So maybe the malachos can also be different from each other. Maybe we shouldn't work off the premise that they're all the same. And on top of this, there's another discussion as well, which we just saw a little bit of a taste of. To what extent can the malachos be compared to other similar aveiros? So, for example, if we talk about Zoreya, so there's a prohibition to plant on Shabbos, there's also a prohibition to plant in Shviyas, there's also a prohibition to plant Kiloyim. So to what extent should we assume that we could derive out one from the other? Should we assume that, oh, well, prohibited planting is the same throughout the Torah? And clearly we see there are differences, so this is a broad question that affects a lot of aspects of this discussion. Hi.
I don't understand, because it's not like we're really comparing the malacha of Zriya, Harisha, or any Mungus or Drusha. It's that we applied a certain specific logic to, let's say, a fia that the result didn't occur. So we want to apply that to a different malacha. It's not like we're, you know, darshaning up sukkah. We're just using the logic that applies to go to the question of whether we want the result or the action to happen. It's not like there's anything inherently we're trying to suggest connecting between Zriya and fia.
Right. It's also important to clarify, then you could take a middle path. You could say, what you're saying is, listen, I have the right to ask the question. I have the right to say that if I see a fia works a certain way, maybe then Zriya should work the same way. But, at the same time, I shouldn't lose sleep over the fact that I see some reason that they can't work the same way. You know, that if I have no other reason countering it, okay, so maybe they do work the same way. Maybe the fact that a fia didn't reach its endpoint means that if Zriya doesn't reach its endpoint, then they're both off the hook, which many would say. However, if I see, but now I'm going to have a technical problem, because Zriya can never reach its endpoint on Shabbos, and now I have an issue, Malacha doesn't work anymore, so either I can answer that question, like the Menachos Chinuch does, or let the Rosh Hash answer this differently, or I can say, I'm not bothered by the question. Okay, so we see from here that Zriya works differently. I would have thought they should work the same way, but the fact that it's impossible for Zriya to work that way says, okay, fine, Zriya works differently. Zriya is based on what I do now, and Afia is based on what happens later. So Rav Tzipa Frank would say, I'm perfectly comfortable saying that, I don't even need to explain why. Because malachos are not necessarily the same as each other. So the definition of Zriya is this way, the definition of Bishul is that way. So what about this other major chiddush that comes out from the Rosh Hash? That the Rosh Hash says that if I bake something at the end of Shabbos and it becomes baked afterwards, that I'm chayiv for that. So this was a highly controversial point. Is that something that makes sense to us? We seem to take for granted, somebody asked beforehand, that the reverse doesn't work. Right, that you can't do a malacha on Erev Shabbos and have it count for you because it takes place on Shabbos. Even though there is some room and some discussion about what you're allowed to do on Erev Shabbos lending into Shabbos, presumably I can't do an act that's not a malacha on Wednesday and have it count as a malacha on Shabbos. So it seems to me that that's not really on the table. So our two possibilities are either you have to finish and end on Shabbos, that's the way the Menachos Chinuch sees it, or you can finish after Shabbos if you start on Shabbos. That was the Rosh Hash's premise. So this was a highly controversial idea. Hi.
Is it related to the Malacha Machshava that even if you did it in the beginning, you didn't have a your Machshava wasn't on Shabbos?
So the reason the other direction is saying if you do it on Friday.
Right.
Well, the Machshava wasn't on Shabbos, but also, even more important, your action wasn't on Shabbos. If you didn't do a Ma'aseh on Shabbos, then it's very hard to say that there's a Malacha there at all. So you're probably missing both. But what if you do it on Shabbos and it finishes after Shabbos? So here the Rosh Hash says, yeah, that's a possibility. And this was very controversial. One of those who sided with the Rosh Hash, this is a little sad, it's kind of an inter-yeshiva battle here, because the Avnei Nezer, as we mentioned, the Egley Tal, essentially sides with the Menachos Chinuch, with the caveat. The Avnei Nezer had a Talmud called the Chalkas Yoav. The Chalkas Yoav has a tshuva about this, Siman Yud, where he's a Rosh Hash man. He thinks the Rosh Hash is right.
And he gets very worked up about this. He has a raya from Yerushalmi, first parak of Shabbos. Halacha Hey and Halacha Vav are both relevant to this discussion. The Sfas Emes also quotes his proofs. The Ger Rebbe in his commentary to the Gemara, they both feel that the proof from the Gemara in Shabbos, in Yerushalmi and Shabbos, is not focused between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about whether you can set up something on Friday that's going to continue into Shabbos. Does the action have to be finished before Shabbos, or can it continue on Shabbos? So Yerushalmi has two statements which explain Beis Hillel's opinion that as long as you did all your work, physical effort before Shabbos, you're okay. At one point it has a drasha about Sheshes Yomim Havel, that you can work for 6 days and Shabbos you can't work. So what does that mean? It means Shabbos is Shabbos. Shabbos is not Erev Shabbos. So Erev Shabbos is part of the 6 days when you can work. So therefore, if you're working on Friday, you don't tell me that's the full Shabbos. Secondly, the Gemara also says, the Gemara talks about setting something up on Friday that's going to finish Friday night, and Beis Shammai didn't like that. So Beis Hillel says, let's look at what's mutter and what's aser. If I would do this action on Shabbos, it's aser, so it's mutter for me to do it before Shabbos. So says the Sfas Emes, and Kalkas Yoav and many others, oh, so let's work the other way around also. So his whole point is you can do it on Friday because you can't do it on Shabbos. So let's follow it all the way through. It sounds like if you would set it up on Shabbos to finish Saturday night, but that's also part of the sentence. Just like you can't do it Friday to Friday night, you can do it Friday to Friday night, then you can't do it Saturday to Saturday night. So he thought that was a riot in your chayyim in such a case. Others thought it wasn't a great proof, and maybe it means it's also to do it, but you're not chayyim. But this was a whole discussion. What could lead from that? And there was a lot of correspondence back and forth. And if you want, I'll give you a list of all the places you can look for this discussion. The Chalkas Yoav wrote a lot of letters, clearly, where he corresponded with others who addressed this. Great posters of his time, such as the Imri Yosher and the Maharsham, all have letters printed, written to the Chalkas Yoav, either supporting him or arguing with him on this point. And there was another Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, the Kli Chemda. Kli Chemda is Sefer HaKomish. It's really a very halachic, lumbish-oriented Sefer HaKomish. Nowadays, you have a lot of Sfarim like that. It's a very popular genre. I think before the Kli Chemda, you don't have so many very lumbish or lumbish ones. The more recent development, he was one of the earliest to do that. He was a student of the Avnei Nezer. So he wrote to his co-Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, he wrote to the Chalkas Yoav. He doesn't think that this is possible. The idea that you're chayiv on Shabbos for something that happens after Shabbos, he doesn't think it would be. He says it's got the following problem. And it relates to the first statement in the Yerushalmi. It says Shabbos is one day and non-Shabbos is 6 days. According to the Rashash Chalkas Yoav approach, you have a thought Shabbos is more than one day, right? You have a following situation. You can put something in the oven or whatever it is, you start a malacha on Shabbos, and now it's Motzi Shabbos, let's say it's Sunday, and the malacha has not yet played out. Seeds in the ground, whatever it is, grab the oven, whatever it is. So now you're telling me, really, what am I obligated to do to prevent the malacha? I'm obligated to undo it. So you're going to tell me that Sunday morning I have to do something in order to be shown the Shabbos? It can't be. Shabbos is limited to the day itself, at least as far as what a malacha is. So you can't tell me that avoiding malacha requires me to actively do something on Sunday. He feels that's a logical impossibility. So for that reason, he takes argument with his colleague, his co-student, Chalkas Yoav, and there's a lot of correspondence back and forth about this issue. Is it logically possible or not? Dustin Gstettner mentioned the other day, who has a tshuva also supporting the basic Chelkas Yoav Rosh Hashanah approach, that you are liable even if it finishes after Shabbos. He thought this is comparable to something we saw last week, or earlier this week. Sorry? Exactly, the Ibuki Yosef. What does the Ibuki Yosef say? And we saw the Ibuki Yosef from Bava Kamma, which says that if you light candles on Friday afternoon, as we were obligated to do, wanted to do, and you have those candles still lit Friday night, as again you were obligated to have, says the Ibuki Yosef, you could have thought that that's also a malacha. You have candles that are attributable to you that are burning on Shabbos, based on the view of the Yochanan, who describes that, they said that fire that you set is always considered to be your action. So it says in Rukh Yosef, no, that's not a violation of Malacha, because it all rolls back into your initial action. So when I lit the candles Friday afternoon, so all of the lighting that happens for several hours after is all rolled back into my initial lighting. So there are those who would extrapolate from there. But okay, so you see, this is the way it works. That everything goes back to your initial moment of action, and therefore, even if the malacha plays out after Shabbos, if you did your work on Shabbos, that's going to make you chayiv as well. That's a position that the devotees would
Why the assumption that you have to have the same standard for Shabbos in 6 days?
Against the Raya in Russia.
Yeah.
I think that that's a general approach that many did not read Yerushalmi the way the Rosh Hashanah agree, and that's not necessarily reapplied. I mean, that way you're reading is one of the ways in which
I think the notice of
it's really that's a Raya that his colleagues brought. So that's a basic question. All of this comes out of this whole central debate between the Rosh Hashanah and the Chassidut, and it affects a lot of issues within Zoraya. So we have more topics to talk about within Zoraya, probably continuing from the beginning of next week, seeing that the Rosh Hashanah and the Chassidut keep popping up. Because essentially, we have now two different views of what's happening, even separate from all the other details. What is Zriya? Is Zriya putting something in a position where it's likely to grow, i.e. like the Chassina says, or is it actually bringing about growth of a seed, growth of something, which may have a very different parameter? And this is an issue that's going to recur, certainly within Zoraya, so try not to forget it too quickly. But it could also be put within the context of the broader Shabbos discussions. I think it was what Jonathan asked before. So there are some who took that approach. The contemporary Svarim would say, oh look, here we have our same question again. Right? That here the Mechaskina is basically saying it's about your being at rest. All we care about is when you put seed in the ground. And the Rosh Hashanah saying, no, it's about the world, it's about seeds being planted, and therefore you're only chayiv when it ultimately happens. So it's definitely tempting to make that link. It's definitely attractive and neat to put it all back into that structure. I wonder how much it's really playing a role here. I wonder how much it's really motivating. It's part of what we try to figure out on Svara and the position. So the question is, what's really driving someone to say something? So here, when we have this issue with the Rosh Hashanah and the Chassidut, we're both striving to answer a question. So what was really pushing them to their position? Was it the overall belief about what Shabbos is about, and whether it's about your doing something or what's happening? Seems to be it's more about the one central principle we've been talking about the past few minutes. That if you have an action which causes an effect after Shabbos, or brings about its real goal after Shabbos, is that workable within a Shabbos structure? Do we have to answer that some other way? Do we have to redefine what we're talking about? Or can we accept having a malacha not finish until after Shabbos? It really seems like that's the yisod. What does it reflect beyond that? You could try to theorize. It seems like this is really what's driving Rosh Hashanah and Hasidim to argue. And they both had to answer that question, had to deal with the fact that this halacha wasn't finishing until after Shabbos. Rosh Hashanah was okay with that, and the Hasidim wasn't, and therefore defined, so therefore it couldn't work with Atiyah. And Zriya will have to define differently. We'll have to define Zriya as something that we can do right now, not dependent on it ultimately taking root. It's interesting. This also affects a couple of questions that have been asked on the other positions. So, for example, it says the Shulchan Aruch, in Shulam and Vav, I believe it's Shulam and Vav Dalet, I don't remember if we put it in the Marma Kamos or not. But it says in the Marma Kamos, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that if you throw seeds onto the ground, so that, for example, you want to feed your birds, you have a chicken. So your chickens are running around on the ground. So you want to throw seeds onto the ground for them to eat. So the Shulchan Aruch says that you should not throw so many seeds that they won't finish them within 3 days. Because then they're going to take root. If they only have 2 days or 1 day's worth of seeds in the ground, so then we know the birds are going to eat up all the seeds and nothing's going to take root. But if you have more than 3 days worth of food, so then there'll be some seeds left over after 3 days, and then we have to worry that's going to take root. So this statement could be a kasha on the chasina. How could this possibly be a question on the chasina? You want to see how? For all our Toronto and Fidalia Felder, and say for our Shabbos, it's already sure and yes. Toronto Rabban Rome times. So that's all the time. So his Sefer, he asks, this seems to challenge the Chasina. Why? Yeah?
That's the concern of his letter to the Caesar saying that accurately.
Right, that's what the Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying. But it sounds like in the Shulchan Aruch that only if you have the seeds staying there for 3 days, you have a problem. But according to him, according to Mechassina, as soon as I put it in, I don't have to wait 3 days. As soon as I put it in, it's already a malacha, even if I take it out afterwards. So if I put this on the ground, so why is this any different than what the Mechassina describes, putting seeds in the ground that you come to take out later? So instead of my taking the seeds out later, the birds ate them. Why is that different?
Also against the Eglital, because the Eglital said that it depended on your intent. But now we're saying that...
Actually, it probably helped, right, so probably helps the Eglital, is that this more dubious question, that maybe this is your point from before, that now we have a consideration that, you know, the Eglital would have worked better if you actually could take it out. But the Shulchan Aruch is saying, the Eglital, several hundred years from now, when you write your Sefer, you should know that you have a problem with one thing if you're going to say you're going to take it out. You're going to rely on the birds to eat it. If you have too much, the birds are not going to eat it, and that becomes a consideration. So that essentially could find that. But in terms of the Mechassino's position, so why is it okay if it's going to be less than 3 days? Why is this different than you're putting it there and coming and taking it out a day later?
Yes, sir? Each of the seeds has the equal lack of potential of growth, meaning there's no seed in it. Uh-huh. You're just planning on, you know, any of them could be eaten.
It's a Brera issue, you're saying, that basically you don't know. Kind of a suffix. You know that you're going to plant some seeds, but you don't know which one.
Right, so every seed has a possibility for not potential growth.
So there's no segregation, basically.
Yes.
You want to go back into this whole mental issue, say that really, it's kind of a scam, because really you know you're going to plant some seeds. Right? Like it's a way to cover, it's like the firing squad issue. Right? So you have, when a person gets killed by a firing squad, so they have many different people shooting at him, so that each one can say, I didn't kill him, somebody else killed him. So too, I'll plant all these seeds, and each one there'll be reasonable doubt that the seed's going to make it. I'll know that some seeds will make it, but each one there'll be reasonable doubt. So that's a an interesting detail. But here, it's in terms of this concern, that if you know something's going to make it, so presumably you're chayiv for zriya on something, so why are you not chayiv just because they're not going to make it all the way, when normally you are chayiv? So there are a number of approaches. There's a nice sefer called Yudim Bahalafa that has two different approaches to this question. I think they both reflect a certain principle here. One approach he takes is that this is not called an act of Zriya, right? Which again goes back to the Eglei Tal. And we said that the Eglei Tal says it's only going to be called Zriya because you want it to last, you want it to sprout. If you have no intent to have it sprout, so then that's not Zriya. So too here, your intent is not to have it sprout. Your intent is to feed your animals. So maybe that's not called even a mice is real. And again, not like building something you intend to knock down. If there you have the building. Here the very definition of Zriya perhaps is lacking because you don't want it to fail.
So is that just answering that question? Is the Eglei Tal?
That's
it could be the Mechassinah who agree to that. The Mechassinah wouldn't necessarily think that anything you put on the ground is automatically Zriya when you have a clear other purpose. It is a chesed of saying, look, you're essentially planting. You're going to come back tomorrow and unplant. Then, okay, it's nice that you unplanted tomorrow, but today you planted. And whatever you intended to do tomorrow, you still planted today. But it could be that not every time you bring soil and seeds in connection with each other, you're planting. Here it happens to be you're feeding your animals. You're out on top of the soil, so you're putting your seeds on the soil. It has nothing to do with planting. It has to do only with feeding. And it happens to look the same, but it's completely a different act. So probably the Mechassinah, as much as he does not agree with the Eglei Tal, probably would agree with this. Would agree that that's not called.
So you're not moving it for the neutral zone.
Right, so something where you're not planting at all, and we're going to see, we'll talk about a little bit also, there are cases when sometimes somebody might put vegetables in the ground, which theoretically could grow into bigger vegetables, but you're doing it not to make them grow, you're doing it to protect them, because you don't have a fridge, and this is where they will stay fresh. So we'll talk about the ramifications of that. Yes, sir?
You said that the Shulchan Aruch was actually sort of like the Rashash here, because in the case of the Rashash, you would have been chayav in the fact that you stopped the growth. So
that's the base of the question. And the assumption is the question seems to be a challenge to the Mechassinah, so favoring the Rashash, right, against the Mechassinah says that taking it out later doesn't help. So his question is, so then how does birds eating it help? So one approach you mentioned, maybe that's not called Zriya. Second approach?
I was going to say,
or
I'm
non-approach.
Question on this approach.
Yes?
Are there other times where we see a level that if you do an action or you have different intention, that can totally hurt?
Yeah, for sure. It could be that considered to be a malach shen tzriya for lagufa. That might be the definition of a malach shen tzriya for lagufa.
We're just downgrading the malach again.
Yeah, except it's not really, we're not thinking about malach shen tzriya lagufa because those usually malach shen tzriya lagufa, so usher, you're just putter. So, yes, there are other cases where you see that. Here, it seems like it's even less than that. It seems that this, we have to really see it in the larger picture. But again, we started off with a question of what's significant about putting seeds in the ground. Why is that any different? Since they don't take root today, why is it any different than putting a seed on the table? So the missing part of the puzzle seems to be that's the point. It's going to do that. It's going to intend for it to sprout, and you want it to sprout. So, when you don't have that intention at all, it just happens to be that coincidentally, the place where you need to leave the seed is on the soil. So, then maybe that's really lacking in a fundamental way, even more than a Malachashim Tzrik Lagufa, and it's actually Mutter. I think there's another approach, the second answer, which I think maybe is even more to the point. Yes, sir.
Well, I have to give this kid up and agree there. Translation and definition of Zriya that might like it sounds just like attention, something that like how.
Because I think there's a distinction between the two. I think in the case of the Tal was talking about is that you plant it, you put something in the ground where it would grow, you did everything that's just associated with growing and nothing else, you have no other reason to do this. It just happens to be that you undo it tomorrow. And you knew you would undo it tomorrow. You're having fun showing what malachos are on Shabbos. Well, he was telling me about how his teacher belongs to his very young son, so his son was taking pleasure in showing them a chopped half and they're like, oh, look, this is malachal. So that's not the goal of engineering. So essentially, so let's say you want to show what the malachal is, and you do the malachal, if you happen to be, you plan on undoing it. So if you're not care if you plan on undoing it, you might see you did the malachal, and that's how you define the malachal. But here, you're not intending to plant it at all. It's just that if you leave it by itself, okay, ultimately the ground will absorb it. But your purpose of doing this is something completely different. But if you do find that answer lacking, still be thinking of the scene of would not be protected enough for that approach, I think the other answer, which is a little more solid, is that just like it's not called planting if I put the seed on the desk, so it's also not called planting if I drop the seeds in the desert. Mentioned that's going to be a little bit of a question how the malacha is learned from the Mishkan. And if you put seeds in a setting where it's not going to grow at all, you put it in a sandbox, you put it somewhere where it's not going to grow, that's not called planting. Planting by definition means it's in a setting which will, through the regular course of events, cultivate the seed to grow. So here we're essentially saying this is basically non-arable land. Because even though it's regular soil, it's the same soil everywhere else that would grow, here the reality is you have birds that you know will descend upon it. So if the function is, if the reality of the situation is that seeds can't grow here because the birds eat them, and the only way to eat them is to have so many seeds that can't eat them, but essentially the seeds don't last, so then one could argue, I think cogently, that that's not any different than using type of ground that's not arable, it doesn't grow. And that's probably the answer here also, and I think even the Meches Chinuch is even more powerfully defended with that approach.
Okay. So according to those thought processes, like a freak accident occurred, like you did this in the desert, you put where the chickens are, it started to rain, or a bird didn't eat a particular seed, it did take root, so you can be high on that, because you get zero intention.
So I think it probably come back to the same story, that it's neither integration wasn't guaranteed to happen, nor did it have intended to use Rhea.
Like 99.9% sure it wasn't.
What, because before you did, you saw that?
It's like putting it on the desk, giving it to the chickens. They always ate the seeds. This time one was left over and it took root.
Right, so you're 99% sure it would not happen.
Right.
So then I think, yeah, you would be protected. I think you're essentially not doing an act as Rhea, not doing an act as Rhea. So you were lacking intent, and it's not a protected either. It's not, it wasn't definitely going to happen. I think you would presumably be off of that.
Did you get enough of the plant to through?
That's an interesting question. Presumably after Shabbos, you probably could have probably considered to be a shogeg. It's probably not an act based. Interesting question. Okay, so let's, we're almost out of time. Let's take a minute. Let's just talk about agenda. What I essentially did, we'll review quickly in a second. This is essentially the discussion as far as the Rosh Hashanah and the Chasim. It's going to be referenced again because it comes up as a backdrop of a lot of the Zoray issues and a lot of other issues. We'll have a few other points about Zoraya to say, it's going to come up again. So this is going to be definitely referenced. But as far as discussing it head on, I think we basically sketched out the terrain of what exactly is going on there. Tomorrow is a Chumash day, tomorrow is a Chumash day, God willing, Sunday should be our first experiment with the practical halacha day, so to speak. So Sunday we'll talk about Bukhla Zeriah, we'll talk about specifically practical issues in Zeriah, and then next Monday we'll try to finish off the Lumdish issues in Zeriah. So just to quickly review what we spoke about today, we spoke about the Rosh Hashanah and Chasidah, the question how can you have Malacha take place on Shabbos, and the Hashrashah will take place after Shabbos. The Hashrashah says it's all contingent, the Rosh Hashanah says it's all contingent, and therefore it's totally parallel to baking. Baking, you can interrupt in the middle. Seeds, you can interrupt in the middle. You can take them out. When it comes to baking, also, if you do baking at the end of Shabbos, the base after Shabbos, you are chayiv. But Chasinuch disagrees. Chasinuch says that no, you can't be chayiv baking like that because baking and planting are different, and therefore the definition of planting is putting it in the ground. We talked about a lot of maybe between you can also take metal, that if you put it in your chayiv right away, assuming you have intent to take it out. You mentioned the disagreements with that, the Shlomo and the Chasinuch have both mentioned that that should be like building something with intent to destroy it. And we mentioned the parallel is not perfect, because there at least you have a building that is not called the Chasinuch. Then we talked about many different approaches to explain what the Chasinuch premise that there's a difference between Afia and Zriya. A lot of them had to do with time lags, had to do with the role of humans versus the role of nature, and the like, some of the definitional issues. And then we talked about Rashash's other assumption, that you can be chayev for the law that finishes after Shabbos, a possible proof of Yerushalmi. Some of these colleagues disagreed, didn't find Yerushalmi necessarily saying that, and the possibility that there may be a proof of Yerushalmi Yosef also, you can finish something after Shabbos on Shabbos. And then we mentioned this question that how could Shulchan Aruch say that you can lay seeds out on Shabbos as long as it's eaten by the birds. You mentioned two approaches, that's not called the Mansi Zriya, or it's not called the arable land, it's not the area that's susceptible to Zriya. And then we also talked about the question of whether this fits into a whole lot of Shabbatira about what Malachas and Shabbos are, whether or not that's really what's pushing them in the Kasim and the Rashash. And also the question in general, do we have to assume that Malachas and Shabbos are always comparable to each other, or is there reasons that you can have different definitions and different Hagdars? Okay, a little more to say about that, but we'll leave that for now. Tomorrow, Chumash day, and Sunday, Halacha day. Have a fantastic day. Yeah.